It is a day that we get to celebrate our moms. Of course, every day should be like that, but we get busy with things, with life, etc. And so it is nice to be reminded of those things that are extremely important, our mothers. And I kind of wonder if the Apostle Peter was thinking about his own mom, or maybe his wife, or mother-in-law. We know that he had a mother-in-law, so he had a wife. If Peter was thinking of the women in his life when he penned these words in his first epistle, chapter 3, where he writes, "Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to adorn themselves." So here we've got this group of women that are kind of singled out. Peter calls these women out, these women of the past. He calls them these holy women who have gone before us, who adorned themselves by putting their hope in God. And that by doing so, they attracted the attention of the one who matters the most, God. It caught God's eye by the behavior of their lives, by who they were on the inside, not who they were on the outside. And so as I was reading that and thinking about that, I thought, well, what women of the past was he thinking of? Who specifically is he talking about? And how did their hope in God be such that it would be an example to us today, and an inspiration to women, to wives, to moms, to this day? How did they put their hope in God that it was so profound? Well, Peter gives us a clue right there in that chapter. He mentions Sarah. So we can go ahead and take a look at Sarah's life. If you want to turn to the book of Genesis, we hear have the actual narrative of Sarah and Abraham and what they went through in life. And you see showcased, especially in chapters 17 and 18, how Sarah hoped in God. And believe me, it was no easy thing to do. Most women way back in that day got married when they were teenagers. So reasonable to assume that Sarah got married as a teenager. It's also very common that the women of that day would have kids, and lots of them. It was a badge of honor for a woman to have a large family. And so she gets married probably in her mid-teens, and through the rest of her teenage years, she has no child. And then through her 20s, and then through her 30s, and then through her 40s, and during her 50s, she goes through menopause and still has no child to show for it. It is hard for some of us to imagine the immensity of the disgrace, of the shame, of the sadness and sorrow that would fill her life when she lived in a culture where that was expected. And yet she has no child. Nothing. She goes through her 50s, through her 60s, and she gets this word, this message from her husband that he's had this angelic messenger telling him that he's going to be the father of many nations. Well, if you were Sarah, what would you think? Well, if that's going to happen, it won't be through me. I'm 60 now. My body's as good as dead. It's not going to happen here. So she, exercising, I believe, some confidence that Abraham's not just kind of, you know, getting crazy on her, that she actually says, well, how can I accommodate and cooperate with God's plan here? And it was normal in that day to bring along the maidservant and say, well, maybe you can have a family through my maidservant, because if this promise is true, it's not going to happen through me. And it took a great degree of faith and hope to just even bring the maidservant up. Sometimes she gets a little criticized for it. I think it was a very courageous thing for her to do. And so she introduces that situation into the family dynamic. And she goes through her 70s and her 80s. I mean, by this time, ladies, I mean, is there any reason to have any hope or expectation that you would be the one that's going to have a child through whom God was going to fulfill this promise? None at all. But then she personally overhears a conversation. Another angelic visitors stop by Abraham and Sarah's tent, and she's kind of hiding in the tent overhearing the conversation, and she hears these guys saying, no, it's going to be through Sarah that you're going to have a child. She's going to bear a child, and she'll be a blessing to all the nations through her. And it was, you know, I mean, if you were hiding in the tent overhearing, you would laugh too. And that's what she did. She just laughed. I guess loud enough where the angelic visitors heard her. She was just, that's unthinkable. That's hilarious. Give me a break. I'm like 89 here. But indeed, God blessed her and she had a child. Her hope through all those decades caught God's attention. And he chose to stick with plan A and had a child, brought this child into the world through Sarah. And so Sarah hoped in God to honor his promise, to make her the mother of a great nation through 89 years of barrenness. 89! And 25 years of an unfulfilled promise. I mean, that also is like a hit behind the back of the head. I mean, come on, you get this message that you're going to have a child, you know, be a family that'll spawn a great nation, and 25 years of nothing. Nothing to show for it. I mean, in our days, instant gratification, you know, you stick in the microwave, it better come out just the right temperature or you're going to be upset. You know, it just takes a couple of weeks and we're upset at God that he hasn't come through with our prayers. Come on. God, I asked you for this. It's been a couple of weeks. What are you waiting for? 89 years of barrenness, 25 years of unfulfilled promise, and she hung in there, and God said, yep, we're going to do this through you, Sarah, through you. Genesis 17, verses 15 and 16 mention this incredible promise. It says, she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. And indeed, that's what happened. The whole Jewish nation came into being through Sarah. Her hope in God paid off. And this nation became God's chosen people, a city on a hill, a light to the world for centuries. People got a glimpse of the goodness and the grace of God through the Jewish nation. Sarah's hope in God is what made it possible. And the storyline of great women of faith continues through the centuries, and we get to Ruth. Wow. Ruth as well, more than likely, got married when she was a teenager. But she wasn't a Jew. She was a Moabite. But she married into a Jewish family. And so, you know, following Genesis 2, the mother would leave the family and join with her husband, and the two will become one. So she left her Moabite family and community and culture and became a part of this Jewish family, living with her husband and her husband's extended family. But then tragedy strikes. We're not sure if it's war or some sort of a famine or something, but her father-in-law dies, her husband dies, her sister's husband also dies, all three of the men in the family. Again, we fail to understand the enormity of this situation. At that time and in that culture, the women were dependent on the men to provide for them. And if you take them out of the picture, they're left alone. In our culture, it's not that way. In that culture, it was so that way. And Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, realized, there's nothing left for you here, girls. We've lost the men. We've lost our source of income, our source of protection. We've lost it. There's nothing left for you. Go back to your home. Go back to your community, your culture. Maybe God will bless you there. Maybe he will bring to you a husband there. And one of the sisters leaves. But the reason we stand here and talk about Ruth today is because she didn't leave. She took a hold of Naomi and she wouldn't let go. She says, When I got married into this family, I didn't just get married to a man. I adopted the faith. I adopted the faith of the Jews and the Jewish God, Yahweh. I'm in. And she makes this proclamation, this statement of faith that in Ruth chapter 1. I just want to read it real quick for you. It's very interesting that Ruth, the story of Ruth, happens right after the story of Judges, because Judges was a very dismal time in the history of the nation of Israel. I mean, it was awful. And the story of Ruth is a story of hope. It's a story of faith. It's a story focused on Ruth and Naomi. And so Naomi is trying to get her to go back to your people. Go back to your gods. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. Wow. What is she saying? She is saying, as a woman of faith, that she hoped in God to lead her, to provide for her, to take care of her, to be her God, and to receive her into eternity, even in the face of her father-in-law and her husband dying prematurely, and that she would then now be a foreigner in the land of the Jews. Among the Jews, she's a Moabite. She's a foreigner, and she is agreeing to this deal. That is an incredible hope in God. God will take care of us. God will take care of me. He's going to meet my needs. He's going to lead me. He's going to be involved in my life, and that's enough for me. You know, there's just so much about the ancient history of these BC days that we just fail to understand because of our culture is so radically different. But we've got to realize what she's agreeing to when she makes this statement of faith: "Where you go, I'll go. I'm with you. Your God will be my God." That statement of faith, she is saying that I am willing to be a widow for the rest of my life, if that's what it takes to be in this community of faith. I'm willing to go my entire life without any children, if that's what it takes. again, guys, we're realizing this is forsaking everything for a woman in those days. Everything. She's accepting a life of poverty, a life of vulnerability to evil men, a life of loneliness. That's what she's signing up for. Did not have the kind of structures that are in place today to help widows, the type of economic structures that we have, the opportunities for employment, they just weren't there back then like we have them now. Realize what she is saying is, I am going to sacrifice my future to be identified with God and his people. That's hope. And it got God's attention. It caught God's eye. And he chose Ruth. And he blessed her and brought her into a situation where she runs into Boaz, who is among the same family as her husband that had died. And by listening and following the instruction of Naomi, her mother-in-law, she finds herself in a situation where she could be married to Boaz. And through some, you know, unique situation with the city elders, this arrangement is being receiving their blessing. And this is what we read in Ruth 4. Then the elders and all those at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." What are they saying? They're saying, may you be right there in that same company as the great patriarchs of the Jewish faith. Those whom God used to grow and build the Jewish nation, may you be right there in that lineup. Right there with Jacob's wives. Right there with Judah. Right there in the line that we now, looking back, can tell that's the line of the Messiah. The Lion of Judah, referring to Jesus Christ. And he's saying, may you be right there in that company. And indeed, that's what happened. Ruth gives birth to Obed. Obed grows up, gets married. They have a child whose name is Jesse. And Jesse is the father of David, King David, the greatest king of Israel, and the one through whom God says it's going to be through your line that the Messiah is going to come. And the stage is set because of Ruth's hope in God through such adversity, not just in the face of adversity, the loss of her husband, but even with impending hardship, incredible difficulty. She said, I'll take it on. If that's what it takes to be a woman of God. And she embraced it, and God blessed it. And we carry on the storyline of great women of faith to Mary, the mother of Jesus. Wow. It's almost like Act 3. Here she is, a young teenage girl. She is engaged to be married. And an angel interrupts her plans. And we know the story. This angelic being, Gabriel, shows up to deliver some news that God found favor with her. What's that saying? That's saying, hey, girl, you caught God's eye. There's something about your life here that God was attracted to. And he informs her that she's going to be the mother of the Messiah, the King of the Jews, the Savior of the world. I mean, how can you handle such a press release like that? But he lowers that boom. And again, we've got to try to throw ourselves in the shoes of Mary and understand the enormity of what this angel is saying and what she would be agreeing to. She is agreeing to get pregnant out of wedlock. As much as that may be taboo today, it was really bad back then. I mean, it was incredibly shameful. And by saying, yes, let it be done to me as you say, she is agreeing to get pregnant out of wedlock. The consequences could be the loss of her marriage. And indeed, Joseph contemplated ending the relationship. She almost lost her chance to be married. She was also shunned by her relatives. What makes me think that? Well, guys, you know, she went to Bethlehem to get registered with Joseph and his family, and there's no room in the inn for a pregnant woman that's about to give birth. Give me a break. Come on. Any guy worth his salt would realize there's a situation here that's a lot more difficult than mine. Use my room. But no, they were shunned. There was no room for them in their heart. There was no room in their hearts, in their lives, because she's pregnant out of wedlock, and they didn't want to mess with her. And she ended up having to give birth to her firstborn in a barn, which back then was a cave, hole in the wall. That's what agreeing with the Holy Spirit's proclamation, or the angel Gabriel's proclamation, was going to get her. And then it just piles on, because she's forced to leave the country because the king is threatened by this king of the Jews that's being born. And so she has to live a portion of her life in a foreign land in Egypt until she's able to finally come back to Israel again. That's what she agreed to. And there was something that God saw in her life that knew that if he sent the angel Gabriel to her, she would agree to this deal. Would you? I would have to think twice. You're basically throwing your life away in the world's eyes to agree to this. But she was a woman who hoped in God to use her life to be the mother of the Son of the Most High, whose kingdom will never end, even though it would require her to become pregnant before marriage. And she agreed to it. That's a woman that hopes in God. And we see in this dream that Joseph had when the angel was telling him, don't you dare call this engagement off. And he reveals to him what's going on with Mary. And he says, she will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. It's the hope of the women of old that brought the hope of the world into the world. Their faith, their hope, their reliance on God is what made this possible. That God was able to come into this world and be a savior to all people. I mean, it goes all the way back to the Jewish nation. They came because of the faith of Sarah. Then the Messiah is set up because of the faith of Ruth. And then now we have Mary agreeing, and now Jesus came, and now we're here because of the hope that these women of old had in God. That's what we're talking about. That's what Peter's talking about here. And now as mothers, you moms, wives, in this day, women in this day who are hoping in God, you also get to participate in this great plan of God that the hope of the world is spread throughout the world because of you. Your hope in God continues the thing that was started by God way back with Sarah. It's still going on today. It's your hope, the exercise of your hope and your faith in God that blossoms, that creates a hope in the rest of this world to take this message of Christ to the ends of the earth. You just sometimes like, well, surely not. Well, surely so. If it wasn't for the hope of the women who have gone before us, none of this would be happening now. And your hope is every bit as pivotal in accomplishing God's plan now. I am reminded of what Paul said to Timothy in this regard. When he said, I have been reminded of your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded now lives in you also. And you see it there. The faith of the grandmother being passed on to the mother, being passed on to Timothy, who is going to be the next apostle, the apostle to even take over for Paul. He's passing the baton to Timothy, and he had a faith that was passed on to him by his mom. And that's the influence that the holy women of God have on the next generation. That's who Peter's talking about. That's how they put their hope in God. Wasn't because it was the easy thing to do. It wasn't because it was culturally fashionable at the time. It was hard. It was difficult. It was painful. It was even, in many respects, disappointing. But in the end, God honored them. God blessed them. God saw their hope, and he used them to be a part of a plan that's so grand that we could never understand the scope of it. We'll never capture the enormity of this plan to save the world and how he's using these women who have gone before us to accomplish that end. Never sell yourselves short, moms. Mothers, never sell yourself short. God certainly doesn't. The Bible is by no means silent on how he has used women, holy women of God, who have hoped in him throughout the centuries.